This morning in your book, you can turn to the little section on honesty in business. That's the portion that we're going to be dealing with today. I know several of you in the conference have a farm or are farmers, and I remember reading in the Reader's Digest one time about the salesman who went out to the farm and sat and chatted with the farmer at his table. And so he was invited to join them in a meal, and he gave them his sales pitch and described the whole product and the whole thing. And sitting right there at the table, the farmer says, "I'll buy it." And the guy said, "But you haven't seen it." He says, "Well, are you lying?" And, you know, we had an experience like that last year when we moved from Colorado Springs to Seattle. We had our house for sale, and a minister was moving to our church. The man that was going to be the minister of administration, it was the church that Hart mentioned last night, Pulpit Rock Church. And so we heard that he was coming, and we also heard that he had some interest in our house. So I called him out in California, and so we started talking about it, and I described it, and we went on for about 20 minutes, and he says, "Good, I'll take it." And I said, "You'll what?" And he says, "I'll buy it." And I said, "Well, you don't really mean that, do you? You haven't even seen this house yet." And he says, "Well, why'd you buy the house?" And I said, "Well, we bought it because we were going to minister to students at the Air Force Academy, and we bought it for that." And he said, "Well, we want to use it for ministry too, and if it's good enough for you, it's good enough for me." He says, "I'll buy it." And we went on like that about 5 minutes with him trying to convince me that he was going to buy my house. And then he said, "Well, how much?" I said, "Well, let's see, what would you want to pay?" And he said, "Well, what do you want?" And he wanted to give, you know, it just blew my whole mind. The thing was that he had known the Navs way back when he was on active duty in the Navy, and he'd actually lived with his wife, I believe, had lived with Lauren and Lucy Sanny at one time, and he knew I was a navigator, and he said, "Well, man, I trust you. I'll just take it." And so it was interesting to see the response of someone who really trusted what you said. And as you know, most of us are built with a sales resistance inside that has the presupposition when we're being sold anything that the other person is lying. Or at least it's not quite on target. That there's something that doesn't quite come together in what they're sharing. And so as we today consider this topic of honesty in business, it's not just business, but it's honesty in your life of business dealings. Whether you're an employee, whether you have your own business, and or whatever the situation is. Because the scriptures, of course, speak broadly to both situations. If you take your Bible for just a moment and turn to Titus chapter 2. Christian and honesty in business. We'll begin at verse 6. Titus is one of the books that our Bible study in Seattle has been studying this year. And this passage, I believe, fits in very, very well with the things that we're talking about today. "Likewise, urge the young men to be sensible. In all things, show yourself to be an example of good deeds with purity and doctrine, dignified, sound in speech, was beyond reproach, in order that the opponent may be put to shame, having nothing bad to say about us. Urge bond slaves to be subject to their own masters in everything, to be well-pleasing, not argumentative, but not pilfering, but showing all good faith, that they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior in every respect." Now, there are several things in this little passage that I would like to just share with you by way of introduction. I think the first thing we see is that we're told in Titus 2:6 to be sensible. Some of the other versions use the word self-controlled. But in this particular letter of Paul, I think the word sensible is used almost five times. It's either four or five times in chapters 1 and 2. And I did quite a bit of thinking on what it means to be sensible. Well, basically it means to use your head, to do what is sensible, to use the good sense that God has given us. And I think part of that relates to our conscience, as we were sharing yesterday. Now, the second thing it says in Titus 2, 7, and 8, it says that we as Christians are to be an example. That is, you are to be an example. Likewise, urge the young men to be sensible in all things, show yourself to be an example of, first of all, is good deeds. The second thing that it lists here is purity in doctrine and dignified. Now, I'm put them around in a little different order here. We're to be an example by what we believe. Now, I'm not speaking a great deal during this conference on the topic of doctrine, but I believe doctrine is very important. I believe we must know what God says, what the Bible says that reflects what God says, and of course it all does. We want to get into the Word and to understand what it is to be a Christian, and so the basic issues of our life. And I think there can be a tendency, even though we want to emphasize application very strongly around our Navigator ministries, we want to be sure that we do not neglect doctrine, belief. And so it says we're to be an example by sound doctrine. The second thing, it says that we're to be an example by good conduct. The way we live our lives, people ought to be able to look at us and see Christ in us. And the other thing is that we're to have sound speech. The way we talk, what we say, verse 8 it says, sound in speech, which is beyond reproach, in order that the opponent may be put to shame, having nothing bad to say about us. And the reason for all of this is our testimony. People look at us and they make an evaluation of what a Christian is by our lives. Now that you may say, well, wait a minute, don't look at me like that because I'm not a very good Christian. Or I'm just a young Christian. They don't care. All they know is that you're a Christian. In fact, they don't even know that for sure. They simply know that you're religious. You go to church. You're involved in Christian things. And as far as many people are concerned, that makes you an example of being a Christian. And I'm sorry to report that it is not always that Christians make the best employees or the best employers or the most honest business people. I'm sure all of us have had situations where we have found that as we have dealt with someone who's a Christian, we say, boy, they're not competent. And there have been times that I would take my, whatever it is, my business, something to get repaired, to someone that I knew was competent and I was convinced was honest, rather than just because a person was a Christian. Now, I wish it could be otherwise, but the fact is we're more interested in what a person can do and his witness in that way. And I'm sure many of us have had business dealings with Christians that didn't work out very well at all. Now, it goes on in verses 9 and 10, and it says to urge bond slaves to be subject to their own masters in everything, to be well-pleasing and not argumentative, not pilfering, but showing all good faith that they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior in every respect. And so the issue of being an employee, being a worker, and I believe that is the context that it would have here, is simply that we honor God by what we do. Now, I think a number of you have probably sat in on a seminar that I have given on the Christian and a secular job. How many of you have been on one of those with me in the past? I know a few of you have. Okay, basically, as Mary and I have conducted some seminars in the issue of the Christian and his job that came out of the book, Your Job, Survival, or Satisfaction, we have found that about one half of the questions that have been asked in our question and answer time were ethical questions, not specific questions on the work. And many of those were questions that, you know, I didn't have a ready answer to. I sort of, you know, most times I always give an answer whether I've got one or not. And someone says that you're saying something that you haven't thought of yet. if you can get that. Or what is the other expression is, you know, put your brain in gear before you engage your mouth. Well, you know, rarely am I caught without being able to say something. But I really was uncomfortable in the fact that I felt we needed to get in the scriptures and find out what it is that God gives us as guidelines for a person who in work and business. And so that is essentially how the book on honesty began, in trying to search out some issues in business. But the problem was, I found out you could not separate business and the rest of your life. I found out I couldn't just do the situation of what you do on the job without getting into a whole bunch of other areas. But today, I'd like to concentrate with you on several specific issues in terms of honesty. There's a story that Douglas Aircraft Company, who now is having a bit of difficulty on the DC-10, as the McDonnell Douglas Company, they were competing with Boeing to sell Eastern Airlines its first big jets. This was back when the jets were just coming in. Eddie Rickenbacker, who was then head of Eastern Airlines, who was a famous flyer from aviation history, he came to Donald Douglas, and he asked Douglas's company, who were making the DC-8, and who were close, they said, "You're close to Boeing on everything except one thing, and that is noise suppression." And so he gave Douglas one last chance to out-promise Boeing on this feature. So Douglas went back, and after consulting his engineers, he came back to Rickenbacker and says that he did not feel that he can make that promise. And Rickenbacker replied like this. He says, "Well, I know you can't. I just wanted to see if you were still honest. You've got yourself an order for $135 million. Now go home and silence those jets." Now, honesty does pay. Many people in the business world who are totally non-Christian know that it pays in business to be honest. I was talking with a man last week who is a Jewish businessman and has many factories and plants, and he said that he says it never pays to tell anything but the absolute truth. Well, see, and it's not on Christian principles that most people do that. It's because it's for a person's reputation, and it's good business. But we as Christians need to have a different motivation. I remember one time a story being told, asking an individual if they would lie about a particular matter. And he gave, "No, I absolutely wouldn't lie." "Well, so what lie? What if I gave you $10? Would you lie for $10? He says, "Oh, good night. Never." "What about $25? "Absolutely not." $100? He says, "No, absolutely not." $1,000? "Well..." And someone says that everyone has their price. I personally don't believe that, by the way. But there are some people that might be in that situation. And I believe we've got a lot of problems that we run into in business. Other people's standards, accepted practice, company policy. And so just to raise the questions with you of whether or not a person can be totally honest in their jobs. Can a person be honest and still succeed? Or do we cheat the company by wasting time? How much should a Christian be involved in the power struggles that go in inside the company politics to get ahead? Are company regulations really law? Must we obey an employer when what he asks us to do and commands us to do and says that it's wrong, when we know it's wrong? Or how can we confront dishonesty in the context of our work? We see someone else who is cheating. How can we do that? And I'm sure all of us at some time or another have been in situations where some of those questions came up. So today, I'd like to take about our first, hopefully about a half an hour now, to go through some of the basic issues with you, and then we'll open it up to questions, because I'm sure I will not cover everything that is on your mind. So first, let's talk about the five commands, the five basic commands for business ethics. And as we get in there, let's try and define ethics for just a moment. That's a scary word, and most of us don't like it, but let's talk about it for a moment anyhow. To the government, ethics basically is law. If you're obeying the law, you're ethical. To the philosopher, I believe ethics is a concept. A little bit fuzzy, but yet a concept. To religion, many people feel ethics is simply morality, and it certainly is part of ethics. But to God, I believe ethics is obedience. Doing what He says as best as we can figure it out from the Scriptures, using our conscience and the illumination of the Holy Spirit. So from that, I'd like to get into the five commands for business ethics. The first command of business ethics is the command of a just weight. Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 15 says, "You shall not have in your bag differing weights, a large and a small. You shall not have in your house differing measures, a large and a small. You shall have a full and just weight. You shall have a full and just measure, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you." Now, what is the illustration being used there? What is a just weight? What are they talking about in that Old Testament time? Right. Yeah, by weight. And so what would an unjust weight be? Right, or you had a stone or, you know, whatever they used that looked to be the same, but actually was different. It might be off just a little, and almost to the feel, you couldn't tell it. Do you see what they were talking about? It says a just weight. And I believe it was beyond that. It says both a just weight and a just measure. And I believe the issue was simply that we, as someone who would be selling something, gives a full amount for a just price. And for some of you in business, you must grapple with the issue of whether or not you will sell according to what the market demands. Have you ever heard that term? What the market demands? In other words, prices, you get as much as you can out of it. And I think that we, of course, this gets us in difficulty all the time economically, but I know so little about economics that you just heard all I knew right there. But the fact is that it is a questionable thing as to whether we as Christians should push to the extent of what the market demands. A full amount for the just price. I think issues of deceptive advertising are something that we have to come to grips with if you're in the business. I read a little story just the other day about a guy who was scrupulously honest, and he was an advertising man. And so this company, every time they gave him something to write copy on, he would make sure that what he was advertising was precisely right. And so this was back in the 30s or somewhere, and they were supposed to put a bunch of ties on sale, neckties on sale, for 25 cents each. Now, you may say that'd be a good deal, but as you know, money has changed slightly, like about five times in that time. And so he went down and looked at the ties and found out that they were really not all that good. And so he wrote an advertisement, and I didn't bring the little piece down with me, but I think it was something like this. Ties, 25 cents, special sale. They're not as good as they look, but they're good enough for 25 cents. And it satisfied his honesty. And in fact, the sale went so great that they had to order more bad ties to sell it. Well, I think we need to realize that as we are selling something, that we need to be honest in what we do, a just weight. But there's another side of it for the employee. And I believe the issue of the just weight for the employee is that we give a full day's work for a full day's pay. I think that management consultants have figured that the average employee wastes and cheats the company in something like 2.5 hours a week, at least. And that, to my mind, would probably be small, or that is a low estimate. And they feel the greatest loss in business is simply that people don't put in a full day's work for a full day's pay. So I think a Christian has some difficult issues to discuss and to think about. Can he conscientiously participate in a work slowdown? Can a Christian conscientiously do things that which essentially sabotage a factory, for instance? Perhaps not overtly, but covertly. Now, in Colossians 3:23, I think is a guideline verse on this. It says, whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. And remember that Colossians 3 passage also, and in Colossians, is a discussion on the topic of work. In fact, in Ephesians 6:6-7, it says that we're to work not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will, render service as to the Lord and not to men. The second, and you may want to bring up some issues on this, for which I doubt if I'm, you know, there are very complicated things. And here again, I think this whole week I feel like I'm walking on ice on a lake in Colorado in June. Now, ice occasionally gets on the lake in Colorado in June, but you better not walk on it, because we're dealing with hard issues. And there are a lot of little innuendos, but we're going to proceed anyhow. Okay, the second issue is that of total honesty. And so the question is, can we be totally honest in our business? In James 3:2, James said, we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. In Romans 12:17, which I think I put down there, in Romans 12:17, it says, respect what is right in the sight of all men. Or the Living Bible paraphrases this as, do things in such a way that everyone can see that you're honest clear through. In Ephesians 4:25, Paul says, speak truth, each one of you, with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Now, who is the neighbor? It's anybody. It is not constrained in that passage simply to Christians. It doesn't say brother. It says neighbor. And so we are to do things in the way that God would expect being totally honest. Now, there are some typical problems that I think we need to realize. From the James 3:2 passage, we see that being totally honest is very difficult. He says, if you're able to be totally honest, you're able to bridle your entire body. So there are going to be problems in deciding what honesty really is. But I believe we can say a few things anyhow, that we're to be totally honest with our employer in our time, our reports, our abilities, how much experience we have, you know, that we're to be honest with them. I had a friend one time, just after, he was considerably older than I was, but I was a little kid growing up in Spokane, Washington, and he lived across the street and he was going to college. And so he went down to the Safeway store in town and applied for the job of being a butcher. I said, oh, have you ever been a butcher? Oh, sure. Do you know how to cut meat? Well, of course I know how to cut meat. And he went in and started butchering. Well, he'd never cut a piece of meat in his life. Well, see, as a Christian, I think we probably could not do something like that. I think we would need to see that we ought to be totally honest and leave the rest of it to God. And I believe as an employer, we need to be totally honest to the employee. I had a fellow that was in our Bible study this year, and he had quit a job with a previous employer. He was a Christian and his employer was a Christian. And they had a disagreement. It was a commission situation. And the former employer said, you didn't earn your money. It cost me more than so and so. And so he wasn't going to give him the remaining amount of the commission that he was to have. And it was really a difficult situation. The tempers were there. And I remember talking about it. We had to drive 45 minutes, Chuck, you know, up the road and to Bellevue. And so we'd ride together and discuss this issue all the way. One day, he finally went in to the employer, and I counseled him. I said, now, I suggest you go into the guy like this and say, and just say his name. And I'd like 5 minutes of your time. And they had disagreed totally on whether this money was due him. It was about $1,200, as I recall. And he said, now, I believe that I had earned that money, and it really was mine. But the fact is, we're both Christians, and I do not feel that we ought to be arguing. In fact, from our conversation, it appears that you feel that I have in some way done wrong to you, and I want to ask your forgiveness for that. And as far as what I feel you owe me, I just want you to know that whatever you think is right, I'll do. And he stopped, and the guy was speechless. And there was a silence for about 2 minutes, and so nothing was said, and so he got up and walked out, and the guy said, "Wait a minute. Now, you'd like me to say that he paid him, but he didn't." He said, "Well, listen, I want to make things right. I really feel I'm right, and I'm not going to pay you." But he was chagrined that this guy had thrown the whole burden of responsibility on his shoulders. Now, he never got the money, but he did what he felt was right, and his conscience and his spirit were clear, and he no longer was in a point of contention with another Christian for whom he worked. In Leviticus 19, it says, "You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. You shall not oppress your neighbor, nor rob him. The wages of a hired man are not to remain with you all night until morning." So there is the issue of being honest with the employee. And there are a number of other issues that we could get into, but let's press on at this point. The third thing is the law of serving. Jesus taught us in Matthew 20:28, as he shared there, that we are to be servants and not to be served. He says, "The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." Most of us go into business and into a job to think of what can I get rather than what can I give. Most of us find it very encouraging and a very interesting concept to think of ourselves as servants of God. But we find it very degrading to think of being servants of another person. And in fact, we don't like to do that. Someone has said that you find out whether you're a servant when someone treats you like a servant. And then what's your response internally? Now, I believe the concept of serving people needs to undergird all of our functioning in business, whether we're an employer or an employee, whether we're dealing with consumer products, or whether we're just in our own business, such as a farm, where we're not necessarily always dealing with the public every day. So the law of serving. The fourth is the law of personal, what I'm calling them laws. That's probably a loose terminology, but if you'll bear with me, the command anyhow. The command of personal responsibility. Most of us have at some point in our past used the expression, "Well, it's not my fault. They told me to do this. Or I was instructed to do it this way." And we're constantly trying to shift the blame for something in our work to somebody else. In James 1:14, it says, "Each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust." And prior to that, it was the guy who was trying to blame God or someone else for his sin. He says, "You can't do that. It's your fault." And I think the person who is willing to bear responsibility and to accept responsibility. Again, this past week, I was discussing two different employees with the person who employed them. I won't go too specific since this is being taped. But one employee was not doing a particularly good job this year. Had worked there for 3 years. It's a summer establishment. But the problem was, anytime they would bring up some little thing, get defensive and say, "Oh, I didn't do that, and here's this excuse." Whereas the other guy, it was a fellow that had been involved in our NAB ministry down in New Mexico, and had been working for them now for several summers. Said, "Well, whenever we bring up something, he says, 'Oh boy, I really blew that. You're right.'" And he was a learner, and he was willing to admit his mistake. I mean, he didn't admit it when it wasn't his fault, but he was willing to be corrected. And so there was the issue of bearing personal responsibility. So I think we need to serve our employer, our employees, and our customers. Personal responsibility. Okay, the other is the issue of reasonable profit, Luke 6:31. This is a difficult one, by the way. What is a reasonable profit? And in an article in Eternity Magazine of a few months, about a couple years ago, I believe it was now, Bill Kruse was out doing interviews of Christian businessmen. men who, the kind who would go and speak at CBMC meetings, and they were very successful, and, you know, there were all these kinds of things. And he said he went to this one fellow, and he had made his interview, and it was all great, and the guy had put it perfectly on tape. It was just incredible. He's going to write it up in Eternity Magazine. And as they were driving to the airport, the fellow mentioned something about his mother putting her money in a savings at, you know, 7% or 6% or whatever, and he kind of laughed, and he says, you know, I don't go into any deals unless I can make 500 to 2,000% profit. He was in real estate. And he says, here's how you do it. He says, you find someone who doesn't know the value of his property or is anxious to get rid of it for financial reasons. Never tell a seller the potential for the property or the deal you're planning. And Kreutzer said that as soon as he left, he just put on the erase button and wiped it off the tape. He said, that man's testimony is never getting in Eternity Magazine. Because his life in one area was different, his life in another. About 4 years ago, or 3 years ago, it was just when we were doing some of those seminars on work, a guy was here at the Glen. He was a brand new Christian. And he was in real estate investment down in Houston. And I remember sitting right down in the lobby or the foyer or whatever you call that downstairs. You come in the castle. And counseling him on his business. He was extremely successful as a real estate guy. And he was the kind of guy who, he had very few friends, and it was a cutthroat business. And every day, at the end of the day, he had one friend that he'd call up and he said, "You draw any blood today?" That was the kind of an issue it was. I mean, it was just on the edge of financial disaster and in million-dollar deals all the time. And he said, "I'm going to leave my business." Well, me being a very pro-work type of person and being a secular job, I tried to talk him out of it. He said, "You don't understand." He says, "I cannot continue to do the things that I have been doing before now that I'm as a Christian." He says, "I've got to get out." So, you know, there do come issues that confront us in our work which may actually lead us out of a job. By the way, in this issue of reasonable profit, and I mentioned Luke 6:31, the golden rule. Now, the golden rule is biblical, by the way. It says, just as you want men to treat you, treat them in the same way. The seller needs to put himself in the place of the buyer and say, if I were selling this to myself, knowing what I know, what would I do? Now, I know that's hard. And it's a difficult situation. And there may be some of you who would like to share a few other items on that. But I think besides reasonable profit, there's an issue of reasonable wages. By the way, I don't know what a reasonable profit is. See, I feel like in a grocery store, you know, there are things that they make 2% on or nothing or lose 5%, and other things that they make 50% on. So on an item-by-item basis, I'm not saying that it has to be exactly as that. There are such a thing as lost leaders. But nevertheless, I think we know, we in our own consciences before God in our business can determine what a reasonable profit is on goods. And the issue of reasonable wages, they're inseparable from the issue of reasonable profit. Everybody needs to make a living, both the employer and the employee. In fact, it's interesting in Luke 3:14 that John the Baptist was giving some soldiers some instruction. He says, "Now do not take money from anyone by force or accuse anyone falsely, and be content with your wages." I remember one of the last raises I got in the Air Force, I didn't really feel we needed it. I feel it could have been given to the younger troops, and I was a major at that time, and we had plenty to live on as far as I was concerned. You can't turn it down. I don't know how you turn down a raise from the government. It means we can give more. But we didn't need it, whereas others probably did. Somehow, we in America need to come to the realization that it is not just more that's enough, and that we need to learn to limit our standard of living. And the day is coming, by the way, whether we would like it or not, because of some of the energy crisis, it is going to have more of an effect than I think any of us can possibly realize. I don't like it, but the fact is I think that is what is going to happen. Okay, so let's go on now. Those are the five commands of business. Now, you may want to make a note But just in the interest of time, I know I'm going to get caught at the end if I don't go ahead, and then we'll stop at the end to have some more questions. I'd like to discuss with you just some typical problems in business and being an employee or an employer. And I'll go through these relatively quickly so that we will have time for questions. One is just simply obeying the law, doing what the law says. In Romans 13, 1 and 3, you can jot down as our relationship to government. Now, I would like to make only one caution and one comment. What is legal may not be ethical or moral. You see, the Bible is not the same as the United States Constitution or the laws of the state of Minnesota or whatever it may be. So what is legal may not be ethical. There may be things that are perfectly legal to do and nobody is ever going to put you in jail for, but that you really ought not to do. So I think we have to deal with our relationship with the law. The second has to do with the issue of misrepresentation. That is, just shading the truth on issues in our business dealings so that it isn't quite right. The third, and I've got illustrations with each one of these that I could use, but I think I will, in the interest of time, continue on. The other is compromise and condoning dishonesty. That is, we see something that is dishonest, and we decide that we're going to do nothing about it, or maybe we wish to do something about it. I remember a situation that I had one time out at the Air Force Academy in this particular area. It wasn't one that I encountered personally, but there was a faculty officer who was, right now, for instance, the cadets have just checked into the academy, and this summer they're going to spend considerable time out in some maneuvers and some hard physical training in a place they call Jack's Valley, out north of the Air Force Academy. And very frequently, faculty officers who aren't the regular training officers will be out there with them, getting experience and working with the cadets. And it's illegal to have alcohol out there. And so one day, this major, I believe it was, found that a cadet was hiding alcohol in his tent. And so he found it, and he just took this kid and chewed him out fiercely up one side and down the other. Now listen, I am not going to turn you in, but if you ever do this again, I'll have your hide. And he was being kind to him and did not, and just purposely overlooked it. About 4 months later, the same kid was caught with alcohol in his room at the Air Force Academy. And when he was confronted with it, he said, well, last summer, Major so-and-so found it and didn't do anything about it. Within 1 week, Major so-and-so was fired and was leaving the academy, dismissed from the faculty, because he had tolerated dishonesty. And I had a similar situation that happened to me where I went the other route, that I where a kid was doing something, and I may share it with you later. But the fact is, we have a responsibility, perhaps to an employer, perhaps to the law or whatever. We may need to confront dishonesty, and so I'd like to talk just a little bit. What if you do confront dishonesty? How can you do it? Because I think all of us run into a situation like that. And so let's just talk about confronting dishonesty, and I think I have a little section on the back. I think the first thing we need to do is make sure that we have the correct facts. Many times we don't really know the facts. The second thing is to try and figure out whether what you are observing is an issue of personal preference or whether it's really unethical behavior that you're seeing or dishonest behavior. Is that legible to you there? That's a little better, isn't it? The third thing is, if you are going to do it, like going to the person himself or going to his boss or whatever it is, use written notes. Write down precisely what you are going to say or very close to that so you don't go wandering off. Because as you do this, you tend to get in little arguments or discussions and whatever. And so it's wise to use written notes. I think it's important for you to determine, to try and discern between isolated instances versus habit patterns. For instance, you may have an employee that's not doing what is right. Well, one time, and if you're the employer, you can tolerate something like that. You may still need to confront it. But the fact is, there is a difference in what we might deal with an isolated instance, something that just happened, versus a habit pattern. Not in something illegal, but something that is just perhaps in the shady areas. I believe we need to pray about it. Then I believe we need to go to the person involved unless illegality is clearly involved. Now, do you see what I mean there? I mean, if we're really dealing with, you're working in a bank and graft and whatever it is, you know, stealing money is involved, well, you probably aren't going to go to the individual. You're going to have to go directly to the authorities involved. See? But when it's something unethical, shady or whatever, I would try to go to the person, and of course you need to use tact and diplomacy. Now that is risky. You're going to lose a friendship, and there's going to be a lot of things that are going to foul up the situation. But nevertheless, I think we may have that responsibility because we may be able to help. Next, go to the person's supervisor if you're unable to get anywhere with the person himself. Now, here is something that makes it even tougher. Make sure that you have nothing to gain by exposing the problem. You know, you're going to replace the guy, you're going to get his business, you're going to get more esteem. Do you see what I mean? And, of course, there will be situations where you do have something to gain. It's going to be very difficult for you to convince anyone that your motives in this are pure. And then you're going to find out in some cases you may be wrong and you may need to go and ask somebody's forgiveness and to apologize to them and to make amends. Now, on this particular issue, if the person that you're dealing with is your supervisor or your employee, employer, I think there are a number of things that you may need to do. For instance, I can read a direct quote here by a man who has experienced this, Paul M. Hamaker, who is a former president of Montgomery Ward, advises this approach to going to a boss or to an employer when there is something that boss is doing that you question. So you can go up and say, listen, you're wrong, I'm going to fight you all the way, and, you know, that kind of thing. And he advises doing something like this. Boss, I'd like some advice. There's something you're doing that bothers me. But maybe my standards are cockeyed. Explain it so I'll understand. Now, he says, most bosses won't fire you on the spot for doing something like that. I mean, you are taking a risk, you realize. But you're coming in with the thought that you might be wrong, or you'd have the wrong facts, or you don't understand the situation, and you're asking for a clarification rather than accusing. And you may get into a situation where you simply have to actually quit the job. That could be a possibility if you're in that kind of a situation. So those are some issues on confronting dishonesty. Let's go back to the other typical problems for just a moment. One is in obeying your employer. Now, your employer may ask you or demand from you that you do something that you feel to be illegal. And I have a friend who was working in the headquarters of a large business dealing hardware and other merchandise, a company, I suppose it's similar to Kmart or something, but it's not Kmart, but they handle all of these things. And his job requires him to give reports to the company's major distributors. That is, they give reports back to the distributor that gives them goods, and on the basis of that, they somehow negotiate a price and a discount based on the volume of turnover of their product. And on one occasion, his supervisor instructed him to include a previous report with his current monthly report because it would give them a particular advantage in terms of the buying price. But it was not right. And the friend, by doing this, this friend of mine would have to sign a false report. And the supervisor observed him, assured him, I've even talked to the company representative, and he says it's okay. But he was troubled, and he went home, and he just couldn't do it. And so he went back and said that he just didn't really feel he should do it. And so the supervisor again said, well, this is the way we always do it. And this is the way we handle this account. But his conscience still would not permit him to do that. And so he refused to do it. And after much prayer, and he claimed Proverbs 21:1, which says that the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and as the rivers of water, he turns it whithersoever he will. He said, now, if I lose my job, fine, but I'm just going to put this before God. He refused to do it, and his supervisor had to grudgingly concur because this guy had to sign it, and he risked his job for what he believed was right, and later on, he got a promotion. It didn't kill his career, and it didn't get him fired. But see, if you establish a reputation for honesty, pretty soon people won't even come to you and ask you to do things that are wrong. Regulations. Now, are company regulations law? And I have to say, in the technical sense, no. Being an Air Force officer, there were a number of things that you run into where there are regulations umpteen inches high that you can't even much less read them, much less know whether you're conforming to every single issue. And most times, regulations are put there to stop an excess that occurred at one time in the past. And I recall a situation where some young officers who I knew quite well were graduates of the academy were up at Cheyenne at a base up here, and they had been asked to sign off some reports, a document saying they'd spent so much time in the trainer. And it was basically for control of the computer time that controlled this trainer for a missile launch vehicle. But they said, we didn't spend that much time. Well, you've got to put down that you spent 2 hours because we got to show that we used all the time. But they refused. And they said, well, I need a clarification. And they actually called in the inspector general and the people who wrote the regulation. And the intent was simply that they complete the exercise. And the only reason for the 2 hours was because they had to block that much time because it could possibly have taken that much time to complete the exercise. But being proficient, they normally completed it earlier. But yet they had to enter that amount of time. And so they challenged it and found out the proper interpretation of why the regulation was there and therefore did not have to continue doing it. And their consciences were clear. How about the little things in your life, in your work, how you use your time? Just little issues that may come up, perhaps it's supplies or whatever the situation may be. And there are many times, of course, of personal and business matters are very intricately related. And it's hard to tell what belongs to the company and what belongs to you. What about your work time? Do you really put in a full day? That's a typical problem. And what about politics, power, and friendships? How much should you use the power or the friendships that you may have to get ahead? And I think that Matthew 20, 25 through 26 is a good section of the scriptures to give you some guidance there. Says, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. I have a question, and I'm not going to deal with it in great detail, but of getting heavily involved in political infighting and power struggles in the context of a company. Yes?
What was that scripture?
Matthew 20, 25 through 26. Okay, let me close our time today, before we have some questions, with just a few comments on the issue of how to make ethical decisions in your work and in your business. And these are a fairly simple set of suggestions or nothing that you could not come up with if you sat down and thought for a minute or two. I think the first thing is to get the facts. Just make sure you really understand what the situation is. Search the Bible to find out if it does have anything to say to you in that particular area. It may not. But then again, there may be some significant principles. Because like in the first couple chapters of that honesty book, we put down the principles of honesty. Well, maybe some of those apply, but it doesn't speak to the exact situation. I think, secondly, you better examine your personal life. How is your walk with God? Because when you're not walking with the Lord, in fellowship with the Lord, you tend to not be very sensitive to what is right. Then I think it is important to know the accepted standards in your profession. They may not be correct all the time. They may not always be ethical, but you should at least know and be able to grapple with them. Now, this is going to counter something I said before, Listen to your conscience. Now, I want to explain that. Listen to your conscience under the guidelines for conscience that we discussed yesterday. Okay? Not just arbitrarily. And so if you'll refer back to the discussion on conscience, that will help you as to what we mean there. Pray about it. You may need to seek counsel from some other Christian who has been in a similar circumstance or a similar job. That's why I can't counsel in certain areas, because I just haven't been in those shoes before. I try to give some principles, but I haven't had to live with all the problems there are. You know, praise the Lord. I've got enough that I've had to live with without living with all of yours, too, that you're encountering in every issue of life. So, but it's good to seek counsel from someone in a similar type of circumstance. And then finally, you're going to have to step out on faith. You may not know exactly what you ought to do, but you'll need to pray, get God's leading, and then take an act of faith. Okay, I'd like to stop there and to make some time for some questions. So if you want to look over your notes and see if there's some things that you'd like to bring up for clarification, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes, I think, before our announcements. Yes? True. Yes. Yes. In general, that would be the case. A full day's work is defined by the employer, basically. I mean, some people become very troubled when they don't. There are some jobs where you may go for 2 or 3 hours some days without having anything to do. And I have talked with guys who feel guilty sitting around doing nothing for 2 or 3 hours, just twiddling their thumb. But what they don't realize is the employer, there is in fact nothing to do for that period of time. But their employer is paying them for their total time. He may ask them to give 3 extra hours some other time, or just to put out 125% for a whole week to work overtime. And the employer is paying them to be available for that, not to always be busy, busy, busy. And sometimes, you know, it's an employer doesn't want you to look like you're doing nothing. I realize that. But there, in fact, is nothing to do. So I think it's a measure of what the employer expects. And in the seminars on job, one of the key issues is to communicate and find out what is really expected of you. What production level? How much work? And so forth. Does that help just a little bit? It's a nebulous thing, but you can define it as you get into your job. Yes, sir. Last.
Take all the market there as far as selling something. My operation is tied to auction.
Right.
And there's time when the golden rule, I would not buy what I'm selling at that price. And yet it's the open market.
Right.
It's a good point.
Now, you're involved with livestock, which goes up and down considerably. There are times that people sell at a loss, depending on the year and the time. There are times that people sell it at a good profit. I would not apply quite my comments directly in that to each individual pig, for instance, as you go through the year. But what I would do, what I'm thinking of primarily there, are kinds of products that are basically manufactured products for which there may be a great demand and which are not value. For instance, I think we need to be careful in looking at quality of a product, of a look-alike product, advertising it and selling it as equivalent to that which we know that it is not equivalent to. So in a competitive market, and so you know that's done all the time. You buy this little plastic thing, and it looks just like whatever the other product is, but it breaks down within 2 days. Toys are famous for this. Yeah, and so I think we need to be a little cautious in those areas. In the open, what I call the open market auction, things that are pressed on the auction or by a stock and so forth, I think that is a different governor to that kind of thing. But the private distributor who can put his prices anywhere. That's where I think we have to at least give some thought to it. I'm not laying down a rule, but I think we have to give some thought to with whether what we are doing is proper. Yes. You could have gone all day without asking that. My stepfather was a member of the Teamsters for his entire life. When I was in college, when Chuck and I were going to school, I used to have wonderful idealistic discussions with him, arguments in some terms. Since then, I have learned a thing or two that I didn't quite know at that time. It's unusual for him to realize that, I'm sure, but I have learned a thing or two. And that unions do fulfill a real function in society, as does free enterprise. But both have their excesses. See, the unions were brought in after the Industrial Revolution to counter employer abuses. And they were needed and justified. And today we happen to be in an era where the unions are probably more in power than the companies are. And so you've just got this back and forth thing. And so the only thing that I think I'll say, because, you know, the answer is not, there is nothing here that just says precisely on that. I think we have to, as individuals, realize that if I can conscientiously do what I'm asked to do before God, fine. It's God that I must answer to. And I think an individual strike, that I think a person has to decide whether or not that is justified, not necessarily just to go along. Now, we had a teacher strike here in Colorado Springs 2.5 years ago, and even Christians went both ways, and there was a great deal of antagonism that was involved. And I heard both sides of the story. Everybody was lying to everybody, if you listen to all the stories. But I think the thing that I would just encourage is that each individual person get before God and decide whether the issue is just as far as he is concerned. And as far as I'm concerned, some Christians must be in the unions to be sure to be involved in actually the politics of the union. And I mean politics in the good sense of it. So to try and keep things from going to excesses. And when things really are going in a wrong way in a business, well, then you need to confront the employer. And when it's going the wrong way in the union, I think we need to confront it. So I don't think there is a simple answer to that question. There are some unions that I probably would have a difficult time belonging to. How many of you belong to unions, by the way? Can I see your hands? Okay, so, you know, and you can't, some of them are closed shops, some are open shops. And I think we just have to live with what we find in some of them. But if it forces us to go to an excess and violate our conscience and our ethical standards, we may need to get out of it in some fashion. But I have no problem of living within it, given certain guidelines that I think each individual must establish for themselves. Yes, there was a question. Yes, right here. Yeah. Well, I think the individual is going to be the situation. And, you know, I observed my stepfather go through a lot of things. I observed the excesses on both sides, and it's really hard. See, because people are sinful. You know, people are not good. And therefore, in whatever excess of power they're able to wield, they generally do. So there's this checks and balances that goes into the union situation. And I think we ought to be careful as Christians not to just come down and slam hard on one side or the other, because it's just not that simple, I've found out as I've discussed it as time goes on. Yes, yes, sir.
In your book, your job satisfaction or survival, you put in there that one thing that I liked when I read it, that your life does not belong to the company still.
Right.
Of course, we put God first in our family, but Right. We don't have to give our lives to the company store. I think your book is real good on that.
Good. Well, appreciate the comment. Okay, yes.
I find that it helps to get into the therapy, dealing just with the real difficult issue of the president. If you go back and make your decision based on the honesty of the day's work and the day's pay.
That's right.
So on, rather than because sometimes you're so deeply involved that it's hard to distinguish, except by going out to the end of the service day and see actually make the decision on the day.
Right, so you just go back to basic principles. Right. Thank you. Yeah, Wes?
What if you buy a lottery?
What if you buy what?
What if somebody gives you a bad deal and you really feel that you have been cheated?
Uh-huh.
How hard will you get for
that? Well, if the question is, and make sure we get that part on tape, it's if you're given a real bad deal and you feel that you are cheated, have been cheated, that I believe that you should take some recourse, because part of our responsibility in a responsible community of people is to keep the ethical standards of the whole community. And so if we simply tolerate dishonesty and say, oh, well, I'll just turn my cheek, you know, and play that little game, we're going to do other people a disservice because others will get cheated. Now, how you do it? First of all, I would recommend that you make sure you're as far as you know, the facts are there and you have them written down. And then that you go back, you go to the individual and you confront them with this in the presence. Always take someone else with you, if at all possible. Just a friend, or make sure there's a third party present if it's a fairly serious issue. And then if they are unwilling to admit it, I believe that you may be in a situation where you say, well, then I need to at least take some further investigative possibilities, whether there's a better business bureau or whether there is a possibility of legal situation to at least discuss going that route.
You mean a lawsuit?
Mm-hmm. Well, not, I don't. You may not have to go to the lawsuit, but I think you need to discuss it. I think the person needs to know that you are serious about this issue. Now, I'm not talking about a little thing, you know, 30-cent difference here and whatever. I'm talking about something that's very significant that does have an effect on the community. For one thing, most people, their reputation is important enough. You may not have to do anything, but they just know that they were found out, and their reputation in the community, depending on how big it is, will begin to suffer because you will probably not be at all bashful about letting people know that that is not the place to trade. Yes, ma'am.
How about legal action?
Okay, well, I think legal action is not against Scripture. I have a question when it is taking another Christian to law. That's the one thing the Scriptures do mention. As I recall, it doesn't prohibit it, but it asks the question of why should you do that? Why can't you settle it among yourselves? But that would basically be in a time when it's within the same congregation. In that instance that I mentioned a little bit ago, he asked, should he confront the elders of this person's church? We considered that possibility, and we decided against that. Now, Paul, for instance, appealed to the legal authority of Caesar when he was being unjustly accused by the Jews. Do you remember that? And he said, I appeal to Caesar, and he went to court, essentially, in that environment, and actually used the laws of the land to do what was right. Now, I think we ought to use that as a last resort in that sense, and I think we need to be careful, especially in the area of suits for non-material things. Do you know what I mean by that? Someone was telling me about, who was it that works for rubber company? Okay, you were telling me about someone who, this company produces tennis balls, and someone took the tennis can and drank water out of it and cut his lip and is suing the company because they didn't put a warning on that you shouldn't drink water out of a tennis can. Well, you know, I mean, it does come, there are certain non-material things. Lawsuits are getting something incredible. Well, I believe we ought to be very careful on that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yes, definitely, because we think, well, it's not wronging an individual, but this company has wronged so many people, I can get my part too. In fact, the fellow that was used to be president of Hertz, he said, when you see people cheating on their employees, says, don't do anything. It's not your business. Keep your nose out of it. They're just getting back at the company, and the company expects it. And I said, it's completely wrong. I said, he is off base in that.
The gray area of taxes.
One more question. Okay, I'm being kicked off the platform, you can see. Okay. In the area of taxes, is this the last question? No, that's all right. In the area of taxes, I think we need to, we again have the laws that are here, and I think we need to be careful that anything we do is within legality, but also that if there is any area that we are trying to play games, just find all the little loopholes, that we ought to be a little bit careful on doing things that may be, in fact, unethical. For instance, one who gets rather a high salary through certain things could find some ways to pay no taxes at all, which I really think would be questionable because then they are not bearing their burden. And we ought to try and, you know, as a Christian, I think we ought to share burdens with one another, and that's one of them, even though you might have some ways that you can get out of paying anything. Okay, let's, Daryl?
Jack, one last
question. Jack, okay.
What is the professional person, the attorney, the CPA, the insurance consultant, the benefit consultant, who's retained by a company who has dishonest practices? Do you condone them? Do you confront them? What do you do in that situation? Because you cover an outsider.
Yes, definitely have thought of that. That's a common situation. I would say that as just an attorney or a professional person who is an outside consultant, that they have as much of a responsibility to speak their mind to that company, in fact, to refuse to represent them or to help them when you know that they are doing things that are dishonest. I know I can't speak, I'm not an attorney, but I know that were I in that situation, I could not plead that kind of a case personally because I would then be a part to that. And it is not just a business. And it's not just a game, well, you know, they're going to get another guy just if I don't do it. Well, that's true. But at least I don't have to live with it in my conscience, you know, and having been participant in that. So I think the outside consultant, the professional person, has as much responsibility as anyone does in that, Jack.
Really appreciate the question. I think that's right down the nitty-gritty where we live.